This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. As we're going through the playoffs and everything's getting started and everything's getting all hyped up as we reach the end of the regular season, I am your co-host, Andrew Reich. I am not joined by my co-host, Adam Murray. My co-host, Adam Murray, is out in Europe going through Russia, and on the way back from Russia, he's going to be going to England for some reason. I'm not sure if he's going to bring any communism with him, but I told him not to, out of just the desperate hope that we could still do the show.
I got enough communism for all of us here, buddy.
And as you see, because Adam Murray is so important to this show, I had to replace him with two people, and I had to get two people that I knew would be on the same page, so I found something for them to both be on the same page, even though they're from total different necks of the woods, but we're going to actually be talking about, and I don't want to have too many of the listeners leave because I know they're not the most popular team in the world, but I want to talk about the San Antonio Spurs because
great opening, Andrew.
I know. And so we go to the NBA playoffs, and what are we always talking about since 1998? We're talking about the San Antonio Spurs. They're the beacon of NBA success. If you want to call them the New York Yankees of the NBA, you can. You know, the success, the track record is all there. And I wanted to bring along two people that I think are very distinguished in their accomplishments. Also, in terms of their sports fandom with the San Antonio Spurs, they more than do their own. I will start with the place to be veteran, and that is Will from Texas. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing good. You know, the health is okay, losing weight. But as a Spurs fan, man, I'm burning a little bit tonight, man.
Well, we're not going to try to give too much away as we, you know, go through our little editing here. But we're just coming off of a game where it was a pretty fair significance for the Spurs in terms of their, you know, their home winning streak being snapped by the Golden State Warriors as they get to their 72nd win, which ties the Bulls. Now they're on pace to possibly break it in their last game against the Memphis Grizzlies. But a little bit of a sour one, but, you know, there's more games left to be played. But we'll be getting to them. But, Will, it's so great to have you here. It's the first time you're on the show.
Excited, man. I'm excited.
We talked about this before. I think it was in August or for something around SummerSlam. I said, I'm going to get you on that show somehow, you know.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I actually wanted to do an NBA podcast through the season, but I'm lazy. I just never started one. So
and
I'm happy to be on yours.
I mean, some wrestling fans are NBA fans, but you know, some of them are intertwined. But it's hard. It's hard to find. You know, we get a decent listenership here, but you know, from the Place to Be Nation fans, and for those people that do listen to Will's shows, which include, you know, Goodwill Wrestling, Dangerous Alliance, a lot of the reaction shows. I am glad that you're here listening to us. Hopefully, this crossover, you know, is a success, but we'll see. But it's great to have you. I also want to add another one, a local yokel, I'll call him, to the show.
Shugs.
A friend of mine. He runs a fake newspaper called The Daily Roo. Also a self-professed wrestling fan. Self-professed in general. I think you're a teacher, am I right?
No. You have me all backwards and unfigured out, Andrew. I remain a mystery to you. I am a simple radio traffic reporter by day, and by night I have a podcast, which is exactly the same as radio, called The Daily Roo. You can follow me on Twitter at Asimov82 and check more about it. Saints and New Orleans sports related podcast. We always say we're going to talk about the Pelicans, and then we never ever talk about the Pelicans.
Is that like Isaac Asimov?
That is exactly the reference. It's supposed to be Asimov 42, but it was taken, so it was Asimov.
So I do know more about you than you think.
At this point, it would seem to be the case, yes.
And this is Terrell Robinson. How you doing?
I'm doing great. That little intro took longer than Triple H's entrance at the past WrestleMania.
Well, that was Stephanie's entrance, huh?
That was Stephanie's big moment. You're right.
Yeah, it was like you know how in the Super Bowl when Michael Jackson pops out and he freezes? and everyone is just kind of like waiting for him to move. And everyone's like, you could just hear the producer saying, "Could you just fucking move so that we could get this stupid show out of the way so we could play the football game?" And that was kind of like Stephanie. We're like literally at like 10 o'clock at night Central Standard Time, which is where Will, Terrell, and I are all at because we're all kind of in the same area. Will's from San Antonio, and we're here in New Orleans, Mandeville area. And so we're sitting here, and it's like past 10 o'clock, and fucking Stephanie McMahon is doing this long-winded Conan the Barbarian promo about the Sovereign King of Kings, and we're just like, okay, could we please just get to this fucking match, you know?
Yeah, they were going for Game of Thrones, but I think she gave them Skyrim, which isn't as good.
I think
I loved it.
It wound up being Doom.
It wasn't bad, but you can't top last year's. Just the only thing that would have made that one better is if the robots started breakdancing.
But you liked it, Will?
I was there in the stadium live, man. I was blown away, man. I thought it was the greatest, most self-centered interview I'd ever seen or promo. Like, I was just like, my God, they're doing this. But and then they let Roman Reigns, supposedly the future, their standard bearer, just come out to crickets or actually a loud chorus of boos. But,
and,
you know.
And the Roman Empire, the Roman Empire begins. But we do have to talk about another empire before we can even discuss WrestleMania, which has already passed us out in Dallas. But let's go ahead and get this started as we talk about the San Antonio Spurs. Like I said, the beacon of success in the NBA. I'm sure there are so many other franchises that have been just consistently successful for different organizational and individual reasons. You know, the Lakers, the Miami Heat, the once upon a time, the New York Knicks. And it all goes in waves. Everyone has their ups and downs. But it just seems like since 1997, when, you know, a little bit of luck and a little bit of tanking helped the Spurs in getting a number one overall pick and drafting Tim Duncan out of Wake Forest, who was the, you know, the Wooden Award winner out of college, four-year player out of Wake Forest. He went to number one, the Spurs picked him, and the rest was history. But let's go even further back, and I'll actually start here with Terrell. You're from New Orleans. So when I found out that you're a diehard Spurs fan, it just kind of threw me for a loop.
Understandable. I actually get that a lot, although people don't automatically assume I would have been a Pelicans fan. They just kind of assume that I would have no interest in the NBA whatsoever.
Well, nobody's a Pelicans fan, so.
Correct. Yeah, they don't exist. They truly don't.
Hold on, Terrell, because if depending on your age, if you're old enough, you could have been a Jazz fan and a Pistol Pete fan.
That was the popular thing when I was growing up, but I kind of got into basketball a little later, actually. And by the time I did, everybody else was either a Jazz fan for New Orleans ties from, you know, over a decade ago for some reason.
Or a Rockets fan.
Or you had a few Rockets fans, but the big thing at the time was you were either a Charlotte fan or a Magic fan, because those were the two expansion franchises. And they had, you know, Zoe and Larry Johnson on one end and Shaq on the other.
And they had the cool clothes. You know, Charlotte had the teal, and the Magic had like that dark blue with the stars on it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. Very kid-friendly designs as
and
well.
Shaq with the LSU being there.
Yeah, well, that was also probably why Ryan Arena, for example, was a huge Magic fan. I'm joking. He's going to be pissed when he hears that. But I had marched in a parade the night before. I played trumpet in the band. And like when you marched in a parade, the next morning you got to go into school late, which I thought was awesome. So it's like, great. And as it happened, I woke up and I'm like, I don't have to go to school for another 2 hours. And I turn on the TV, and on ESPN is a replay of the San Antonio Spurs versus the Houston Rockets. And I saw David Robinson, and I saw him lead the Spurs back. This was, of course, a regular season game, and beat the Rockets in what I thought was pretty impressive fashion. And I said, I like this team. They have a simple color scheme. I love silver and black. Keep it simple. And yeah, the fact that my last name is Robinson just kind of sealed the deal.
Oh, so David's like a distant relative in your
right
mind.
There's some nepotism going on in there.
Well, was it the likability of David Robinson just as kind of like a goody two shoes nice guy versus some of the other, I don't want to say necessarily bad boys of the NBA, but, you know, some of the more marketable stars that may not have been your cup of tea? Is that one of the other reasons why you sort of gravitated to him?
You know, with sports, pro sports and pro wrestling, I have a love of bland, vanilla entertainers / athletes.
That's why you're a Triple H fan.
I'm a Lance Storm fan up and down. Steve Blackman is amazing, in my opinion.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I just like the guys who... I love that the gimmick, whether it be a fake gimmick or a real personality in sports, of just, I don't need a gimmick. Just let's go play basketball or let's go wrestle.
And now let me say this. The Spurs have always been sort of different incarnations. They've had different coaches. You know, Greg Popovich wasn't the only coach that ever coached the San Antonio Spurs. You know, you had John Lucas, you had Bob Hill,
Cotton Fitzsimmons.
Cotton Fitzsimmons once upon a time. Jerry Tarkanian coached once for 5 seconds. So, yeah. You know, you had different versions of the Spurs. So it wasn't like they were always the most bland, boring, knock you down type of team. I mean, but what did the Spurs represent to you?
They represented a Southern team close enough for me to feel some type of loyalty to, based upon locale.
Okay.
And they had a player who I enjoyed for the fact that he was a stand up sort of eat your cereal, do your homework type guy, which I'll admit I fall for, especially as a kid. I was big into that.
Say your prayers, eat your vitamins, all that jazz.
Correct, all that jazz.
and then go
say racist things.
Now, Will, you are from San Antonio, but your story has got a little bit more of a twist to it. You weren't necessarily a childhood fan growing up, idolizing George Gervin and Larry Keenan and Gene Banks and people like that.
No,
right?
I did see George Gervin play at the Old Hemisphere Arena, but that's because it was part of a YMCA youth league game night or whatever, and I actually got to play on the court at halftime, which I know the fans just love it, you know, when little kids who can't shoot get to play in the arena. But anyway, I'm a military brat, so I was actually a Celtics fan growing up, and my dad's motto was simple: if you're gonna watch basketball in his house, you're either gonna root for the Celtics or hate the Lakers, but if you're a Lakers fan, you're not welcome in the house. He would tell my sister's friends, you know, they'd have a Lakers shirt on or jersey on, you're not welcome in my house. Point blank, you know, go sit outside. And that's what he would do. And that's the way it was in my house. So how many times
did you sit outside?
Not me, man. I've hated the Lakers now for probably 35 years.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I hated Magic. I hated
Kobe. Now I know why you hate Scott.
Hated Shaq. I hated Kobe. I hated Nick Van Exel, Eldon Campbell. Hate them all. You know how hard it was for me to cheer Robert Horry when he became a Spur? So
you didn't even like Robert Horry when he was winning you an NBA Finals game?
I did, because he won us an NBA Finals game.
Yeah.
But he played horribly in 2004, you know, when Fisher hit that .4 shot, which is one of my
we're gonna get to that soon.
Memories. Oh, I don't want to get to it, man. We've already discussed it. It's moved on. Shit. but the point is, it took him being there for almost 2 years for me to accept him as a Spur, man. It was hard, you know.
When was the turning of the screw? When did it happen that you became a Spurs fan?
David Robinson, by far, man. Just you know, I valued the Celtics. Larry Bird retiring, combined with David Robinson coming on.
Well, the other thing that happened in San Antonio is that he was drafted in 87, but he was still serving in the Naval Academy. He hadn't finished his service.
2 years, yep.
So there was about 2 years there where you were like the anticipation. I don't think we'll ever see this in the NBA again, where a guy gets drafted, and it happened with Larry Bird too in Boston, where a guy gets drafted and you literally have a year or two to chew on the fact that you've got this superstar player on the way that's going to save your franchise. And that's exactly what David Robinson did. I think before the Duncan year, 98, it was the greatest turnaround in NBA history.
That is correct. That is correct.
Yes.
So, but what was it about? Was it also, like I was talking with Terrell, is it sort of the babyface nature of David Robinson? You know, accomplished 4-year player, letterman out of Navy, you know, nice guy, super talented. He's got he hits all 4 quadrants, you know, you could say, as a player. Was that what gravitated you to him, or was
it? Well, it's a combination of things, bud. It's part of one, because I was coming of age where I could like my own things, and, you know, my dad didn't dictate what was being shown on the TV. He didn't control the remote as much, you know, because the Celtics were old and dying, and, you know, Bird was retiring, and Parrish would move on, and Mikal would retire, you know. So as my dad kind of lost his love of basketball because the Celtics kind of went down the hole, you know, I was able to now kind of choose for myself, and I'm now a teenager. I'm no longer a little kid, you know. And so my love of the Celtics is still there, you know. And it's been hard to root for the Celtics. I like to root for the Celtics today because they have like a good system and a good coach. But man, when you had like Antoine Walker and those guys, man, it was so hard. Who was the ball hog? Who would always shoot? Man, it's on the tip of my tongue. He was on the Celtics. He's like the most unlikable guy
ever. There was Antoine Walker. There was Ron Mercer. They had
Ron Mercer doesn't – who?
Phillips was on the Celtics earlier in his career.
He got taken out. No, I'm talking – it was like around that Antoine Walker era. He was just one of the worst – teammates, like I'll look it up while we're on the show.
That was the Pitino Jim O'Brien years, you know, where you know things were just desperately trying to harken back to any kind of success, no matter how they got it.
Right, and it was rough. But San Antonio, I mean, so you had David Robinson, good guy. You had Sean Elliott, who showed up, good guy. You had Avery Johnson, who was just this guy who had that persistence and like. You know, there's by all rights should have never been an NBA player or NBA starter, right?
We know because we watched him in Southern when he was younger. Yeah.
But just by sheer will and determination, you know, I mean, was very successful. I mean, his winning record as a point guard has to be up there with anybody, yeah. You know. Ultimately, there was a roadblock there. But, you know, it was just one of those things where you come of age, you're watching the games every Sunday. You're going to the Hemisphere and then the Alamo Dome shortly after to watch the games, and you just become invested. And as a young adult, you know, just I was hooked. I was there pre Duncan. You know, I enjoyed them with Gervin and those guys, but yeah. You know, it was with really David Robinson and Sean Elliott that just everything just came together.
So pre Duncan years, you know, we're gonna obviously fast forward through those because even though they did have their measures of success there, Dennis Rodman obviously having some great rebounding seasons, Western Conference Finals when David Robinson won league MVP, and then Hakeem kind of like showed off against them. Charles Barkley with the game winner against the Spurs in the second round in 93. Tons
of my heart.
I mean, but the story stays the same with the Spurs before Tim Duncan got there. Close.
Rod Strickland throwing away the ball in the Portland series.
How many times did he do that? Oh my God.
But close but no cigar was the story. Even when they left the small arena and they went to the Alamo Dome, you know, even when they went to the Alamo Dome, the first day they opened it, like a water hose broke. You know, was it a water main?
I don't know what it was.
I don't recall, yeah.
It was like a giant water main that blew in the Alamo Dome, and they had to cancel the game. It was like
No, it was the air conditioner, and then LeBron's... Oh, no, wait, that was different.
but it was always close but no cigar for the Spurs. Then Tim Duncan gets there. He's drafted in 1997. Was there like a shift there in terms of the tone? I'm going to hand this to Will, because he was there on the grounds. Was there like a change in tone, a change in determination with the Spurs franchise, even with the fan base of, all right, we can really do something now?
Oh, it was pure excitement, man. It was like, I mean, because I know you said, oh, the Spurs tanked that last year, whatever. I don't think they did. Remember, they had gotten Dominique Wilkins. He was a little older.
Well, Robinson got an injury, and that
Robinson
sort of
got injured. You got to remember Sean Elliott. Was Sean Elliott back with us by then?
Yes, he was.
Okay, because I remember that
he was with the Pistons, and then he ran back to the Spurs. Yeah,
right. Okay, right. So Sean Elliott was coming down with his kidney issues. Man, it was just one bad break after another. Man, I mean, so I don't think we. I mean, people will say this. I'll defend the Spurs to the day they die, but I don't think they tanked that year. You know, I think it was just bad luck.
Agreed.
With a bunch of ne'er-do-wells like and ball hogs like Dominique Wilkins who. And Pop was going to implement his system of defense first. That's why he fired Bob Hill, a very successful coach.
Yeah, because wasn't Popovich like a general manager there?
Yes.
And then he took over as the coach, and he was the coach GM for a little while.
Yes, he was for a while. And that was it. He was going to implement a defense first system no matter what.
Now, let's move to 1999. You know, the lockout comes in. Michael Jordan retires. The Bulls break up. It's almost ceremonious how the exit sort of, like, put an entire cataclysm on the NBA. Well, okay, who's the next, you know, who's the next franchise? What's the next dynasty? And even that answer to this day can still be debatable because of the, you know, the Shaq-Kobe somewhat dynasty that they had in L.A. But the Spurs were the first team that got that championship in the post-Jordan era in 1999. how exciting was that to watch them win that championship? Because there wasn't a lot of fanfare in the NBA at that point. The ratings were, you know, fairly low for that NBA Finals against the Knicks. But it was the first championship for an ABA franchise. It was the first championship, I think, for San Antonio sports, you know, and professionally. So how much excitement was there for you? I'll throw this to Will first.
It was, for me anyway, it was magical, man. It was, you're clinging to every shot. You're following the finals. I worked downtown as a bartender on the Riverwalk when that happened. So I was actually there. I got off. My shift ended right as the River Parade started. So I got to see all the floats go down. And it was like David Robinson finally got his ring. You know, I mean, Tim Duncan, I mean, we were excited about Tim Duncan. But David Robinson getting his ring. Avery proving that he could be a champion. Sean Elliott, you know, remember he had those kidney problems, and we knew about him.
Well, he had that huge shot against the Blazers, you know.
The Memorial Day miracle, man. I mean, to this day, man, I was with my buddy, and I was at his house, and the Spurs were down. I forget what they were down by, 6-5, whatever, however many minutes ago. I said, dude, just take me home. I said, I don't even want to deal with this. And, you know, a few minutes go by or whatever. I said, okay, let's turn on radio. Let's see how bad it was. You know, we'll get them next time kind of thing. And it's like, oh my God, Sean Elliott just hit the most amazing shot. Blah, blah, blah. What happened? And we rush inside to go see.
Got it right on the tippy toes. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. It was amazing. And so being there, it was just like a shot in the arm. It basically saved, San Antonio as an NBA franchise, because they don't win that championship.
Yeah, they were trying to get approved for a new arena because they were still playing the Alamo Dome.
Do they get the new arena?
Yeah.
Right? Does Tim Duncan re-sign? You know, if he doesn't win a ring, does he re-sign?
Yeah, that's one of Orlando? History. That's one of NBA's lost history lessons. Tim Duncan almost signed with the Orlando Magic in 2000. It actually took
right.
– I think there was like a private conversation in San Antonio between Pop and Duncan, where Pop almost begged him to stay.
Well, there's also, at least here, I remember the reporting was that David Robinson would go to Hawaii for vacation or whatever, and that he left his vacation in Hawaii to talk to Tim as well.
Yes.
Say, hey, let's keep this together. And, it's funny. I always tell this story to basketball fans. I was in a Chili's, you know, with my girlfriend and some friends. And Antonio Daniels was in Chili's with some really hot girl and a friend of his. And they were talking about Tim Duncan possibly leaving. And they were talking about things like, you know, state income taxes. And his friend was like, well, you know, Texas doesn't have a state income tax, man. You're going to make more here. And this Antonio Daniels is like, dude, neither does Florida. And, you know, and so, no, everybody was rooting for Tim to stay. And, you know, I mean, the Spurs in 99 still would have been champions. Robinson still would have been a champion. Pop would have still been a champion. But it wouldn't be this, what is it, 19 years of consistent greatness, you know, if he would have left. And who knows what would have happened after that, right? Because that throws everything completely out of whack.
Well, I got a couple more what-ifs to throw at you also as we continue. Terrell, at this point, were you a Spurs fan?
Yeah, I'd been a Spurs fan since around 94, so I'd been on the train for a while, and it was such a memorable finals for me because I was watching it with Ryan Arena, who's going to be on your Western Conference preview podcast.
Yes.
And he, of course, is a hardcore Knicks fan, so, you know, we're two high schoolers, both super into basketball at the time, and you have me on one side in the black and silver, and him over in that ugly.
I will say,
because
I've been in those situations, those are the funnest experiences ever, and not necessarily in a bad way. Like if your team loses, you like never want to talk to your friend again. It's just always a great experience to have one guy root hard for like one thing, and you root hard for the other. And depending on what the outcome
definitely
is.
And Ryan and I frequently reminisce about how the different trajectories of those two organizations have just gone in completely different paths since that fateful 1999 NBA Finals, where he's just been stuck in this Knicks awful purgatory. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten to witness what I think is one of the most astounding runs of any single franchise in sports history.
Avery Johnson with the little baseline jumper,
that little 17-foot bunny.
That's right.
Sealed it in the garden. They weren't they disposed of the Knicks too quick. They weren't able to celebrate in San Antonio. But
hold on. You know, this is another interesting thing. I know that when Kobe and Shaq were making their three-peat run, people always talk about you know, them versus the Sacramento Kings because of that one great series. But the real rivalry was Spurs-Lakers in this era.
Yeah.
Now,
this year, we shut down the Forum and we swept them.
Well, I'll counter with this. Yes, they swept them in 1999. And now in 2000, and in 2000, it was the matchup that never happened because
Duncan got injured.
Well, yeah, Duncan got hurt
that year
with a knee injury, so they lost to the Suns. A lot of people sort of debate whether or not the Lakers would have won. I mean, I think they probably would have wound up playing the Spurs in the second round anyway. The other really good team in the West that year was the Blazers, so but that's neither here nor there. Now, you say that that's a rivalry, but it was fairly one-sided for at least 2 years because in 2001, you still had the remnants of that 1999 squad on that team with Tim Duncan as the star. Duncan was slipping. Avery Johnson was slipping. Mario Elie had already left this team.
Hold on. Well, you know why?
Yes, hold on. Thank you. Go.
You know why it's considered so one-sided is because for 2 or 3 years, actually, once Kobe couldn't even get his stupid team in the playoffs so that they could get trounced by the Spurs, and then in two consecutive years, they're an 8 seed. I mean, because of his selfish, let me run Shaq out of town, he basically kept the Lakers from being a competent and good team for at least a 2 year stretch. And then you don't get the proof when the Spurs were at their peak. And I still think the best overall Spurs team was when they had the big three with Timmy, Manu and Tony being so young. So you basically never got to prove it because Kobe wasn't good enough to carry the Lakers to the playoffs.
Let me ask you this though. In 2001, 2002, they lost both series. Was your loyalty in that organization tested, or were you just such a Laker hater that you just could never even think about getting on that bandwagon?
Well, are you?
Oh, I was.
I'm
always
asking Terrell that.
Will,
okay.
There was no test. I was Spurs through and through. Once I pick a team, I'm not backing off the team. I don't care what happens.
Oh, totally cool.
Yeah, man. It was depressing for me. It was double depressing because I hate the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I hate them.
It was like they were coming back to haunt you. Everything your dad told you was bad.
It was just sick. It was, you know, but no, I mean, I give them their props, man. I mean, put it this way. I mean, they had guys like Glenn Rice and Mitch Richmond come in. You know what I mean? I mean, and the Spurs and the organization, they couldn't compete with that.
Well, that
you know?
2001 team was so fucking good. I mean, like,
yeah.
I don't know if the 96
69 or 70 games.
Yeah.
What year did they win 69 or 70?
Well, no, here's what happened. In 2000, they won 67 games. That was the year Shaq won MVP. But they struggled in the playoffs. They almost lost to Portland. They had to go 6 games with the Pacers. The 01 season, the Spurs had a better regular season record than the Lakers did. But the postseason run that the Lakers had was just epically great. Like, they humiliated the Spurs.
They did.
Like, that was actually probably in my, you know, because I'm about to do a Kobe Bryant special with another Place to Be Nation member. I'm not going to spoil his name, but that was probably the best game I ever saw Kobe play. It was that game one in the Western Conference Finals where he just, I think he went for like 48 and like 40, maybe like 48 or 45 points on the Spurs. Just a thorough, methodical beating. Yeah.
Pure punch in the nuts.
Yeah.
Pure punch in the nuts, man. And now this right here, to be fair, that year, Derek Anderson had come over. Where'd he come over from?
From the Clippers.
Derek Anderson was on the Clippers?
Derek Anderson, yeah, he played for the Clippers.
I thought it was like the Grizzlies or something, or Memphis. Not Memphis. No. He came from, you're right, Clippers. The Clippers.
Yeah, and he got hurt in the Mavericks series.
Yes. And that's our second leading scorer.
Mm-hmm.
Hurt.
So they had to play Antonio Daniels on Kobe Bryant. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And not only that, Sean Elliott, I think this was like the end of Elliott, right? This is kind of like where
he was done after this. After that with the coming back from the kidney transplant.
Right. Yeah. Avery Johnson was washed up, you know, and it was, dude, they hit us like a Mack truck. And I remember,
but in a way you have to thank the Lakers though. because that was the cataclysm, you know, including O2. And they realized, okay, I've got to make moves. Greg Popovich realized, okay, I can't be the GM and the coach. I need help. Enter R.C. Buford.
And well, now, I think R.C. was already part of the organization.
He was, but then he became the GM.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, and not only that, but now a lot of the decisions, like drafting Tony Parker or Manu Ginobili was already drafted, right?
Yeah, but they kind of it was to a point where they sort of hastened his arrival because it had been a couple of years, and they said, okay, right. Are we really going to do this or not? Because it wasn't stash and grab in the Euros like it was, you know, like it is now. That didn't happen in the late 90s.
That's right. Almost
every time, those foreign players never came over. This was one of those ones where Manu played great for Argentina in the World Championships in 02, and the Spurs were like, okay, we really need to bring this guy over now.
You know? And then, yeah. It was
he had
that.
Been sitting over there for like 3 years up to that point.
Yes.
And then in the 01-02 season, midway, that's when Tony Parker got the nod over Avery, you know, when Avery couldn't go and Tony Parker. Right. So Tony Parker's really young and inexperienced. Yeah, it's 02. I mean, I don't remember the games being like blowouts. I remember them all being really close and the Spurs just falling short.
Yeah, the pivotal game was game four where the Spurs had the lead and then Kobe hit a three and then he got an offensive rebound off of a Fisher miss and laid it in and they lost the game. That year also Duncan won the MVP and I remember he missed the shot and he put his jersey over his head because he knew they weren't going to win in LA in game five and that was the end for the Spurs. Then started the run in 2003. And then they go into what was called at the time the SBC Center. It's now called the AT&T Center.
That's correct.
And what was different? It wasn't just the location or the venue. What was different about the Spurs after that?
I'll tell you what, man. Steven Jackson was different. You know? I mean, Manu Ginobili. Now, if you want to talk about locally – the Spurs going on fire. People love David Robinson. For years, Sean Elliott was always voted everyone's favorite Spur. Tony Parker was kind of exciting because he was so fast, you know, and he was a new guy. But, man, having a Latin American star on your team in San Antonio, oh, just exploded. Just Manu Ginobili brought an energy and a frantic pace to that team that had never been seen with the Spurs.
Before. But it wasn't immediate. Like in 02-03, he was decent, but he was still like
it doesn't matter.
Good
people
hand.
Loved him. No. In 03, but I'm saying Ginobili, you know, he was still our sixth man that year.
Yes.
You know, Ginobili just brought that excitement. You know what I mean? And in this community, a very heavily Hispanic community, having a Latin American star to cheer for. Just brought, like I said, there was just an energy that wasn't there before. That was kind of and they were stacked, man. I mean, you know, you had Steve Kerr, like, hardly played at all. They, you know, comes out Dallas and hits those, what, four
Steve,
threes?
Steven Jackson. Bruce Bowen was considered one of the best defensive guards.
One of the best defensive
Speedy
players.
Claxton, you know,
yes.
Solid veteran team. Great, great team. Terrell, did you notice anything different with this first year? I mean, obviously, they had that, you know, the moment that probably made Will smile a thousand smiles where they eliminated the Lakers in L.A. and Kobe Bryant cried on the bench because they knew that they weren't going to get
it. Kobe and Fisher.
Yeah. Sure. No.
And Fisher, yeah.
The four-peat
get that
was,
digging.
The four-peat was thwarted. Was there something different when you watched them eliminate the Nets in the finals to win the championship?
You know, that whole playoff stretch, it just felt like there was like a kismet there, like just certain players rising to these, like, you're not this good, but you're doing it right now. Like Steve Kerr leading that 23-point comeback
against
Dallas.
Because remember, that was the first year that they expanded the first round of best of seven in 2003. They had to go to six games in every single series.
Was that the year when Marbury hit the circus shot win?
Yes, that was against Phoenix in the first round.
Yeah, because I went to game two where we won.
Then the Lakers, and then they got rid of them. And then they played the Mavericks, who had like 61 wins. Really tough game. Now, Nowitzki got hurt, but that's where the Steve Kerr game came from. That was in game six. And then they had to go six games with the Nets because the Nets were able to steal one out of San Antonio in game two, you know. A lot of really great moments for the Spurs. A very underrated year there in 03.
And I think that kind of culminated with like Tim Duncan having one of the greatest individual finals games performances in Game Four. I believe it was Game Four against the Nets.
It was Game Six. Yep. It was Game Six.
It was the closeout. Oh man. Yeah. Almost a quad double.
Yeah.
Two blocks.
So yeah,
away.
It was a lot of individual efforts kind of combining into that just fantastic playoff run.
Speaking of the quadruple double, of the four players that have it, two of them were Spurs.
Huh.
David Robinson had one, and then what was his name in the 80s? Not Oscar Robertson.
Alvin
Robinson. Alvin Robinson. And then the other two. And then the other two were Hakeem and Nate Thurman.
Nate Thurman, wow. That's a
blast. Yeah, then I mean and Tim was two blocks away from that company being in that.
All right. Let's talk about the Spurs fan base. You know, I kind of got the sense I talk Lakers and, you know, all of a sudden the catcalls come at me on both sides here with between Terrell and Will. they get compared a lot as to, like I said, the New York Yankees, maybe the New England Patriots in terms of organizational structure, methodology of running a team, a little covert, a little bit strategically based, trying to always stay like a step ahead of your opponent, trying to outsmart them. But, you know, with that comes sort of a fan base that sort of builds into their own psyche. We always have a trick up our sleeve. We know we know more than what the other team knows.
Hold on. Can I counter that?
Yeah.
Well, because the Spurs under Popovich have actually always been a very reactionary team. When Utah was bouncing us out of the playoffs, Pops, it wasn't so much we're always one step ahead. It's, okay, if we want to go ahead, we have to beat this team. This is our obstacle. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Pop, you know, puts together a team that then finally beats the Utah Jazz, a thousand times since Tim Duncan's been there? I don't know how many times the Utah Jazz have beat the Spurs in the Tim Duncan era, like a handful of times. Mm-hmm. And then once the Lakers went on their run, he has to build a team to counter the Lakers. And that's how Pop is operated. You know, it's like, okay, we're going to steady the course, but then when something gets thrown off, okay, that's our target. That's who we have to eliminate. And that's, you know, I think his demeanor in the interviews and the way he's very tight-lipped, and he'll even tell you, you know, that's family business. We don't talk about that.
Yeah,
I think that adds to the mystique. But
I don't want to compare him with Belichick. You know, Belichick is also considered a very, very good at adapting to his environment in terms of, you know, what works for his team, what he can take advantage of, cherry-picking certain things and making it his own. You know, but for Popovich, he sort of made a little bit of humor out of his stoicness, his standoffishness, whereas with Belichick, I don't think that'll ever go away, but that's a different story for another day.
Yeah, that's true.
But for the fan base, and I'll actually start with Terrell here, is there a sort of like a Xanadu type of like a fishbowl type of mentality in San Antonio because of how successful and how consistent the Spurs are of, you know, we can't let the opponents get the upper hand, we know better than them, where, you know, some people might on the outside might consider that kind of obnoxious?
I find a deep-seated paranoia runs among a lot of Spurs fans because as successful as I think this organization has been, I also don't know a Spurs fan who doesn't think that we weren't screwed over in the playoffs at least twice.
Now, every fan base thinks this.
Sure, and this is true, but the Spurs have such a small fan base, although I'll tell you what, that is starting to change. It's growing thanks to international exposure, which That's is where true. The Spurs are really like taking their wings. Like nationally, we always got crappy TV ratings, but internationally, we're like a top three watch team across the planet. So that is starting to change. But I think initially, it was such a small collection of fans that there was this, even though we're winning, we're not winning enough, and the world is still against us sort of paranoia.
And Will, and now you're there. I mean, so it might be a little one side on your end because you're in there amongst all the Spurs fans saying, you know, we are better than the Warriors. I know they have a better record, but we're definitely better. Like,
I'm not part of that.
But is there a kind of sense of like us versus them?
Absolutely. It's a big team versus a small team, big media market versus small media market. And I think this is what bothered us is, you did have flamboyant, flashy players in their prime like Ginobili and Parker. I mean, you had Charles Barkley screaming Ginobili's name on TV for 10 years.
Ginobili!
Right. You know, and then you had Tim Duncan. When you look back at Tim Duncan's numbers, I mean, we're talking top five player of all time type numbers.
The greatest power forward who ever lived.
Yeah, and then you look at, like, the amount of winning seasons with him as the leader. It's amazing. You know, nobody's had that run, not Kobe or anyone else. You know, I mean, just nonstop excellence. The amount Tim Duncan has more 50-win seasons than all but like two or three franchises in their history. Mm-hmm. I think it's the Lakers and the Boston Celtics are the only ones who surpassed Tim Duncan, and maybe a couple others come close, but like, I'm trying to think. Maybe the Bulls don't come close because they were horrible most of their existence until Jordan, right?
They had good years with Bob Love and Artis Gilmore, but they were few and far between.
That's what I'm saying, you know. And the Warriors have, I mean, you know, if you count Philadelphia / Golden State, they had like really good years with Wilt, and then
the Rick Barry seasons.
Then you had the Rick Barry seasons, right? And then the Mullen and those guys. So
but a whole lot of shit in the middle. Yeah,
exactly. So
the consistency is not what it's what's missing. That's what
I mean, put it this way. If Tim Duncan, and this is what Spurs fans always say, if Tim Duncan like played on the Knicks, right? Or the Celtics, right? Like if that ping pong ball that was supposed to go Boston's way that year and Tim Duncan plays on that team, how does he get talked about in the media? Is he just boring old Tim Duncan or is he living legend Tim Duncan?
Right.
Well, he already is a living legend.
No, I know that, but I'm saying, like, you know, I mean, they're already anointing Porzingis as the next coming of Dirk Nowitzki.
Well,
right?
Well, here's the thing, though. You know, we saw that with Patrick Ewing when in '85 New York struggled and they got back to relevancy thanks to the arrival of Ewing. If Duncan had been there in New York or with the Lakers or with another, you know, I guess you can call him a blue blood franchise. He would have been considered like Shaq was when he went to the Lakers, and he was continuing the legacy of Will Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and George Mikan. He would have been another name in the annals. Whereas in San Antonio, I know David Robinson was there, and God bless him, but Tim Duncan's the greatest Spur of all time.
Oh, there's no question of that. You know? Usually it goes Tim, David, and then George Gervin, you know, in that order. Yeah. You know, and now Kawhi's making a run, you know, and we'll see how his career ends up, you know. So it's, you know, and then you got Manu Ginobili, by far the most beloved Spur of all time. No one's even close.
And Terrell, you agree here with Tim Duncan and his importance versus going to a bigger market and becoming more of a, like, more of a face?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's more important in San Antonio just because it is the exact opposite of what normally happens in the NBA. It's such a rarity that it turned into one of the most kind of astounding franchise stories over the last several years. And despite, you know, this being a league dominated by major media markets, that the Spurs have been the 50-win consecutive, I think it's 17 seasons at this point with consecutive 50-win seasons. I mean, yeah, you don't – he almost becomes obscured if he goes to a bigger city, which he might like more. But I don't know that he would handle it that well, in all honesty. I kind of feel like
– He's so part- – He's so cold-blooded, though, that, like, I don't think it would have mattered to him, you know?
It might not have, but I don't think he would have appreciated the media. He's kind of protected a little bit in San Antonio, because that's a place where you can go and be famous, and you don't have people, you know, constantly
Absolutely
trying
true.
To run you down. In
Absolutely
New York,
true.
I think he gets fed up, and I honestly think Tim Duncan punches a reporter in New York, if he's a Knick.
Like Randy Johnson style?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean,
hold on. If Tim Duncan never punched Kevin Garnett, who he's reported as saying he hates his guts, if he never punched Kevin Garnett, he would not punch a reporter.
This is true.
Kevin Garnett went to an elevator with Duncan, and Duncan said it was like the worst experience he ever had. He hated him. He hated Kevin Garnett. You know, the international flavor with the Spurs, like Terrell was mentioning, you know, how important it was, how a lot of international people follow the San Antonio Spurs. It's important throughout the NBA, but when it comes to the Spurs, I mean, it is pivotal. You could almost say they were ahead of the curve. Nobody's ahead of the curve now in international scouting in the NBA because everybody knows that's there's a lot of talent there to be scooped up. Everyone's in the know, but the Spurs sort of knew early on. I'll just throw this out there, and I'll say this to Will first. does the international infusion that the San Antonio Spurs, does it make them more mysterious as an organization, or does it make them more marketable?
More marketable, more accessible. It has made the Spurs who they are. You know, when we won this last championship in 2014, just all of the flags and the you know, that the players are sporting, Australia, Spain, wait, not Spain, I'm sorry, Brazil, mm-hmm. Italy with Marco Bellinelli, just, you know, of course, France and Argentina, yeah. You know, just have it. What's that?
Oh, I just said wee-wee.
Yeah, there you go. You know, just having that absolutely made them more marketable, more accessible. And it just, to me, it kind of represents, if you're going to be, you know, the NBA and the world leader in basketball, it's kind of what the NBA should be, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, I you brought up earlier how the Spurs are actually kind of a reactionary team. And I think that's a great point in that they identify the threat. Who is the best team in the league? We will be the better team. How do we counteract what they do? But they also do that as an organization as far as identifying trends and taking advantage of them well before other people are ready to do so. They predicted what the change in the hand-checking rule was going to do back in the early going into the mid-2000s.
Yeah, the late 2000s, yeah.
Yeah, that was a huge part of their success there. They're scouring the international ranks way before other teams are. But they do it as just a seamless unit in the front office, which is what right. I think it all comes down to, is that cohesion of personnel.
Well, think about it this way, guys. Okay, so the Spurs are in this unique position of being a really great team because they have an all-timer in Tim Duncan, right? They're never going to get like a top 10 draft pick, right?
Right.
So, you know, they're never going to attract those big franchise guys, right?
The first one probably was actually this past offseason with LaMarcus Aldridge, but that's a different discussion.
Right. Well, I mean, that's a guy who played in Texas and came from Texas. That's a little bit of a
different circumstances,
story.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying, though, is even then – I'm just not talking about that. I'm saying we're never going to be low enough to get a ping pong ball in the discussion.
Right.
So now Popovich and Buford have to have a creative way to get high level talent that isn't going to be available in the draft. You know, and that's where I think the international thing came from is, guys, we're winning too much games. Unless we tank or unless we decide not to make the playoffs. Yep. You know,
and that's why I said that's why I said that about mystery, because in the late 90s, early 2000s, those were men of mystery in the international things. It wasn't that, you know, there was no YouTube, there was no Vine, there was no like streaming. You couldn't just see all these EuroLeague games and say, hey, there's this 18-year-old guy who just killed it in the Nike Hoop Summit and he's from France. And it wasn't like everybody was watching these guys, but, you know, being a first-round guy means that you got a lot of attention. But if you go late in the first round, which is around hovering that place where the Spurs were always drafting, you were probably getting a good player, but a player that sort of slipped through the cracks, you know?
Right, right.
And the international players were those players for a long time, and they were consistent with drafting those types of players. They even traded away international prospects, Leandro Barbosa,
Did trade him eventually.
Yeah, Luis Scola was another guy who they had draft rights to.
And that, to me, that was the big tragedy, because Luis Scola in his prime, especially being like a teammate of Manu's.
In Argentina, they won the gold medal in 04 in Athens.
I mean, we were always struggling to find that big to play next to Tim Duncan. You know, we were always, you know,
Rosho Nesterovich.
Rosho, Nazi Muhammad,
Francisco Elson, Fabricio Oberto.
Right. You know, and you're telling me we could have had Luis Scola for a couple of million or a few million bucks.
And at that point, his game would have just meshed perfectly with Tim's, was the thing, because he was a good passer and a good shooter. And it's just like it was so mind-boggling that you would trade him, and that they traded him to Houston, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And he had a short window due to his age. He was already in his 30s by the time.
Fair enough. Well, so was Oberto, though, and we kept Oberto, who was basically just garbage man.
And Scola's still playing. And Scola's still playing for the Raptors.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and you brought that up as one of the big travesties. I'd like to throw the other one out as Richard Jefferson.
They actually
he had a couple of them. Charles Smith is the one that always sticks in my craw, but yeah.
Ooh, wow.
you know.
I forgot about Charles Smith.
that always just that was just painful just watching Charles Smith.
You were never mad that they let Rodman leave for Chicago?
Rodman was not.
Now people were sick. People in San Antonio, like we, you know, Tara was just talking about. It's a small town. You know, it's a metropolitan area, obviously, very famous city, but it's not more famous than like Chicago and LA and New York and all these big markets. But there was a sense in 95 that the city was kind of sick of him.
No. Rodman was very popular. Here's what happened. You know, Rodman, up until that Houston series, might have been the everybody's favorite Spur. And if you talk to people who met him around town, and I know this is all anecdotal, but it's like he was the most accommodating Spur of them all. Like David Robinson actually has kind of a reputation around here as being kind of standoffish and not very accommodating to fans, you know, whereas Rodman was the guy who would like sign any autograph, sign any piece of merchandise, talk to fans, just always like, you know, I don't know how many times I just heard like, oh man, I met Rodman. He was so cool. You know what I mean? Like as a person, like on the streets. It wasn't until we saw him quit in that, I think it was the Houston game two or three or whatever, when he quit and he took off his shoes and or whatever, where it was just like, dude, fuck this guy. You know, we don't want this guy. You know, he's not what we want representing our city. I mean, how hard up were the Spurs to trade him to Chicago for Will freaking Perdue?
Yeah.
You know, the talent level is not comparable.
You mean NBA world champion Will Perdue, 1999.
Hey, multiple NBA champions.
Wasn't Steve Kerr on the 99 team too?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they stole two of the Bulls. They stole Purdue from the early three-peat, and then they stole Kerr from the second three. Genius.
That's right. But you understand my point, though, right? It's still, you know, one of those things where it's like you didn't get equal trade value.
True.
You know, like it's not like we traded him to Indianapolis and got one of the Daniels brothers.
Yeah. Well, you see that sometimes. We saw that. Now, I don't know if it's comparable now because of how poorly he's played, but like Ty Lawson. Like Ty Lawson was not a fair deal, but they just wanted to get rid of him because the Nuggets were sick of him.
Right. Right. And that's exactly what it was. You know, it was exactly like Ty Lawson, except that Rodman went on to win three championships, you know. But it's easy to do. You know, people got to remember, man, like Rodman was our second superstar on that 95 Spurs championship. He was the third superstar on the Bulls championship. You know, it was kind of the thing with the Spurs. And when we lost, David Robinson was the only true superstar on that 95 Spurs team. Elliott was a good role player.
He was an all-star 1 year.
One year.
Yeah.
You know. Rodman is a Hall of Famer, but he became a Hall of Famer, like I said, being kind of like the third, fourth, fifth, sixth best player on a team.
He was the greatest garbage man in NBA history.
Exactly, with those rebounds. That right. Was. He had a skill, and he exploited that skill.
Exactly.
You know, it wasn't.
And he taught David Robinson. He taught David Robinson how to eat stuffed crust pizza. Do you remember that commercial?
Yes.
That was so bizarre.
So, you know, we kind of stopped at some point in the conversation with 2003, you know.
We're sidetracking, but my point was, is that if Robinson would have won in 95, he would have been like the only second player in NBA history to have won a championship with no other true, like Hall of Famer with him there, or I would say, all-star or, superstar, you know, and the first one was Hakeem in 94. Right? Because it was Hakeem and a bunch of guys nobody had ever heard of before. What? Sam Cassell? You know, who the hell is that? Robert Horry? Who the hell is this guy? You know, Kenny Smith? It was just like mind-boggling.
Mad Max, Vernon Maxwell.
Otis Thorpe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a bunch of kind of like the Island of Misfit Toys with Hakeem. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, he wins a second one with another Hall of Famer, Clyde Drexler. But Robinson would have been the first. You know, he hadn't, I mean... It's kind of tragic because the Spurs drafted Sean Elliott above Glenn Rice. Could you imagine like David Robinson in his prime with like a peak Glenn Rice?
The way he could pass out of the post, that would have been amazing.
So you talk about a team that potentially could have won a championship with only one Hall of Famer. One of the only teams that probably won a championship with no Hall of Famers or no truly great players was the Detroit Pistons, coached by Larry Brown.
2004.
That was the next opponent for the San Antonio Spurs in the NBA Finals in 2005. Win a championship, play down and dirty defense. Really, really ugly NBA Finals, but a win's a win. They go back two more years. They never won back-to-back for different reasons. 2007, they make a run. They go to the finals against an ill-equipped Cleveland Cavaliers team, sweep them, win another championship. Then there's a divot. What was the reason for the seven-year layoff between championships? I'll start with Terrell first.
Wow, it was 7 years. I think it's just the fact that, like Will was stating, you know, it was a team that didn't have the luxury of ping pong balls and had to resort to other means. Eventually, people started understanding that, okay, we do have to start paying attention to foreign players. We had our trio, but Timmy had starting to get old. The plantar fasciitis had kind of sapped him a little bit. You know, he clearly doesn't jump anymore, and that's kind of been the trend for quite some time now. And you just had Tony, who was always good but not great. It was just a combination of factors kept us treading water for that stretch, pretty much where we were at. Then you had, of course, the Celtics super team and the Lakers super team that went for, 3 years, one of the Celtics and then two to the Lakers. And we just couldn't compete with the free agent draw that they had, I think, and kind of set us back combined with our draft position.
Yeah.
Will?
First off, the idea that Tony Parker was good, not great, I'm going to dispute. Okay, because Tony Parker was great. The problem is Tim Duncan, a superstar, was winding down. I mean, people were calling Tim Duncan old 7 years ago, right? I mean,
this is true.
When he was in his 12th year, you know, and not his 19th year.
He's still a great playoff performer. In the regular season, he leaves a lot to be desired. I'll say that for sure. At least in these years.
Yeah, well, when you look at his, like, per 36, he's still kind of like...
But that's the art of preservation in the NBA. Right. I mean, all players have to do that. You have to save yourself. What do you think Paul Pierce has been doing with the Clippers for the last seven fucking months?
But I'm saying, though, that with Tim Duncan, there's just this, like, he's not Kevin Garnett where it just dropped and he never got it back, right? Mm-hmm. Tim Duncan, even though his minutes were down and his numbers were down across the board, the purr was still there. You know what I mean? It was still... steady goes the ship. Just the same.
But regardless of how successful the Spurs were between 2007 and 2014, you know, there was obviously a missing ingredient there because they never won a championship in those years. And that was a very long layoff between the other years in which they won championships.
Well, I don't want to go year by year. I don't want to go year by year. You know, I guess we could, but you know, I mean, like the year that, what was it, 2011, when we got knocked down the first round. Remember, Manu Ginobili was our MVP that year. Mm-hmm. And then didn't he break his leg or break his foot or arm or fingers?
I think he broke his arm.
Broke his arm, like the last game of the freaking season.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, that was a lot of bad luck.
And then, Terrell said earlier, Richard freaking Jefferson. Mm-hmm. And being like...
Antonio McDice.
Antonio McDice at the end of his career. Yeah, well, I would have loved to have peak Antonio McDice.
Exactly.
You know,
he
I would have
like
loved to
spur.
Have peak Kurt Thomas, you know.
Mm-hmm. I forgot about crazy-eyed Kurt. Oh, man.
You know, I mean.
I forgot about
it was,
Kurt.
You know, I mean, Michael Finley got old, right? I mean, that's why, Bruce Bowen retired.
But Terrell makes a good point, though. That's why old Michael Finley was there. That's why old Antonio McDice was there. You're not able to lure those guys in.
Right, exactly. Right. And that was the point. But, you know, there were also things, like I said, like the injury. 2013, it was our shot. You know, we made it back to the finals. But, you know, I mean, a crazy Ray Allen three-pointer off a rebound, you know, after the Spurs had already rolled out the red carpet and, you know, or losing Steven Jackson because he was going to kill Popovich in the locker room, you know? I mean, just
absolutely.
A few weeks before
and then
that.
Bringing him back. Yeah, you know? I like Steven Jackson as one of my favorite Spur what-ifs. Like, what if we convince him to stay?
Five-peat.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. If
I
you
mean,
can
really,
get him under
he would have found a way to get suspended anyway.
Probably.
No. We loved Steven Jackson when he was here. You know,
absolutely.
I mean,
well, not suspended by the Spurs, suspended by the league.
Right.
Oh yeah, somewhere.
He was a big time troublemaker.
But think about this: in 2004, if we have Steven Jackson instead of Hito Turkoglu, tell me, Steven Jackson's just going to bring that toughness and that clutch ability that Hito never had. You know what I mean?
Well, toughness was a major trait for the Spurs, but you know they did have a little bit of a reputation in the early to late 2000s for being a little bit dirty. You know, obviously, Bruce Bowen was sort of like the go-to face of.
No idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never heard this. People think this?
You see, this is that Xanadu-ness I was talking about.
I think it was that optical illusion that Bruce Bowen, like, karate kicked the guy in the face.
Here's my point, though. Regardless of whether it was there or not, they were physical, they were tough, defensively, they were elite. But something did kind of change. Was it the offensive innovation that they wanted to work with because they knew that the league was turning the offense guard oriented, or do you think it was something else that was in the workings for the Spurs organization that turned things around, made them a little bit more entertaining to watch, not as predicated on slowing people down rather than just adapting to their weaknesses?
That's what it was. It was during that 2013 and then the 14 season, like, you know, when we went to the finals back to back, it was that idea that, look, we had, because, I mean, we were like one of the oldest teams, but we were like one of the teams who would bring the ball up the fastest. You know, the passing meant that you had to run less. You know what I mean? Or that you had to dribble less. It was more a thing, okay, get into your spot, pass the ball around till someone's open. Well, if you're doing that, then there's less running. And then the guys who could run, your Tonys and your, you know, Patty Mills, those guys can get open. Those guys can tire out the other team. Yeah. And then the other team's just going to get so frustrated with that wizardry passing, bringing in a Boris Diaw. You know, how big was he for both years?
Yeah.
You know, just,
absolutely.
You know,
but you said a B word though. And I'll counter with another B word that always gets tagged with the Spurs, and
boring.
Whether you like it or not, boring. I've always had a little bit of trouble with that. I hated the 05 finals. The 03 finals to me was unwatchable. But I'll say this, like in 2013, if you know, the Heat Spurs 7-game series, if people thought those games were boring, then I don't know what the fuck you're watching, because those were great basketball games with two elite teams.
You mean 2014? 2013 never
that
happened.
That was one elite team beating the crap out of another really good team. That's what that was.
I think it's honestly the fact that with the NBA, especially as sports go, and with the like tremendous amount of news coverage that they get these days, it's about whether or not you're entertaining is about so much more than your product on the court or on the field. It's about how you react and how you mug for the cameras and how you talk at your press conferences afterwards. The Spurs don't focus on that. There's not a lot of self-promotion. There's just winning and not winning and, you know, not doing sideline interviews, dressing down and just pretty much nonchalanting your way through post-game interviews. They just don't have a lot of much focus on themselves as individuals, which I think is what people tend to buy into. You know, there's no reality TV show with the Spurs.
Well, ever since Magic and Bird and Dr. J, the NBA has been a very individual, star-driven league, right? So, I mean, yeah, it makes sense. The Spurs haven't been born for a while. To me, once they eliminated hand-checking, the Spurs, you know, to me, once you put Manu Ginobili, I mean, some of those performances of his from, like, 2005, 2006, you know, were just amazing. Like, what did he drop on the Suns? Like, he brought the Spurs back, like, I don't know, like 20, 30 points.
Oh,
do you remember that?
Oh, were you talking about the 05 one? The Joe Johnson Suns? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, but it was a regular season game where Manu scored, like, what, 48, 50 points?
Yes. That was long-haired Manu.
Yeah, long-haired Manu, right. Yeah. They weren't boring back then. You know what I mean? And you know, but the boring Spurs were the dump it into Duncan. You know, 2003, I wouldn't argue with you. You dump it into Duncan, wait till the triple or quadruple team comes, then you pitch it out to a three-pointer and the wing and hope they make it, you know? And then hopefully David or Tim will gobble up the rebound, you know? But, I mean, when Tony was peaking, you know, 2007, 2008, whatever.
I felt like his peak was 2012 through 14 for Tony.
Well, okay, but you know, he won the
finals MVP in 07.
Yeah. You know, but my point being is that Tony Parker has always been an exciting player. He's always done like those crazy spin moves and whatnot, right? I mean, he's not a born player. He never has been. Manu Ginobili has never been a born player.
But let's be honest. The Spurs style, as Greg Popovich coaches them and all those assistants that have had success elsewhere, they had this way of saying, okay, you got to rein it in a little bit so that you can help everybody else. It's not about, you know, it's like the antidote that Charles Barkley always says about Kawhi Leonard, that Kawhi Leonard told me, or that Greg Popovich said about Kawhi. He says that Popovich tells Kawhi, the play is not designed for you to score, it's for the Spurs to score. And right. That's just the mindset of the Spurs, and it takes a dazzling player and sort of makes them not as dazzling for the sake of doing the right thing, making the right play.
Yeah, everything's just dressed down as far as scoring goes. It's whoever has the best shot, you know, not who is going to force the shot or create the shot. That's all I got.
And well, let me ask you this here. Who is the true star of the San Antonio Spurs?
In this era
that we're going since 1997. Who's the true, if you had to put a face on the San Antonio Spurs, who is the true face of the San Antonio Spurs?
It's Tim Duncan.
Not Popovich.
No, it's Tim Duncan. And Popovich would not have done this with most other players. This isn't the sort of thing where you can replace Tim. I think you can give Tim a different coach, and maybe they don't do as well. But he and Pop clearly click together perfectly, which is a great thing. But yeah, Tim still wins without Pop. Pop, I don't think, wins without Tim. Or if he does, it's just because Tim got replaced with an equal quality star.
Right.
And you agree there that the face of the franchise or the face of the Spurs would be Duncan?
Oh, dude, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Not Popovich.
Yeah, no. Here's the thing. Popovich is allowed to be Popovich because Tim Duncan allowed Popovich to be Popovich.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, that's it. Tim Duncan, Popovich does like seminars and you'd see him where, like even when he coached the world team this past year, where he was like, he said something to the effect of like, yeah, Coach Timmy, let me do this or something, you know, you know, I forgot what he said, man. I'm really bad, man. When you get old like this, you start forgetting names and quotes and specific moments.
Oh, you're hanging.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's good.
You know, but you know that Tim Duncan, Manu, Tony Parker, David Robinson, even allowed Popovich to become who he became. Think about this. When you're like, you know, the sixth man or seventh man on the team, and Coach Popovich is chewing out the MVP of the league or chewing out, you know, the finals MVP from the year before. Who in the hell are you as the sixth man or seventh man not to fall in line?
You think that helped out a player like Kawhi Leonard with a lot of talent, but needed the motivation to get better?
Well, also, he fits the mold. Here's a guy who doesn't speak. You know, I mean, right. he doesn't smile. And now we're seeing a lot more smiles, you know.
You can't argue, but, though, Kawhi is clearly the Spurs' best player now.
No, without a doubt. But it was the system that allowed him to do that, right? It was the coaching staff who worked on his shot. There was that great, was it ESPN, the magazine, or Sports Illustrated that recently had Kawhi on the cover and did a big feature on Kawhi and his development, you know, like. Yeah, Kawhi Leonard's the future. He's the reason why I'm going to be sad if Timmy retires, but I'm not worried if Timmy retires. You know?
But that means that, in essence, Tim Duncan is not the face of the Spurs because you could put the face
No. He's still the face of the Spurs because he has 5 rings, right?
Mm-hmm.
He has 17 50 win seasons.
Correct.
Was 18 or 19 straight winning seasons,
two MVPs,
3 finals MVPs. He's a legend. It's kind of like, yeah, it was Magic's team when it was the Lakers, but that's only because Kareem let Magic have the team.
That's a good comparison.
You know what I mean? Kareem was still freaking Kareem.
Plus, and I'd also argue that Kawhi is actually an example of a player being built up into the system. Like, Tim Duncan is the system, and he allows Pop to implement it. Whereas I think Kawhi is now a product of it, and hopefully you just keep this cycle going, because that's what a team like the Spurs has to do.
You've
got to build your stars,
and
get lucky and get the one in a million Tim Duncan.
And I felt that was a big difference between, you know, the Warriors making their run with the regular season success this year, going trying to pass up the Bulls 72 wins, and then the Spurs going about their business. I felt like the Warriors were sort of saying to themselves, you know, we can make history. You know, it was a little bit more individually driven, more about style of play, more about looking fancy or looking good while winning. Whereas for the Spurs, it wasn't about making history, because in essence, the Spurs are history. So it was like, well, if we win 70 games, great. If we don't, let's just go about our business. You know,
it's just
a microcosm of the different approaches of the NBA and how one team would handle it normally, like, you know, when the Miami Heat went on their winning streak in 2013 and they won 66 games, and then what the Warriors are doing now. And then the Spurs just kind of saying, well, we're going to be really successful no matter what, you know.
Well, you know, I know when David West got here, they'd asked them about, like, the scouting reports. And he puts his fingers together, his thumb and his pointer finger together. And he's like, that's how big the scouting reports are. You know, a pinch. He's like, we don't scout other teams. We have a system, and we operate within our system. And then we make adjustments as we go. He said, you know, and that's what the Spurs do. They have their system. They have what they believe works or doesn't work according to their personnel. And then the other teams have to adjust. They don't have to adjust. They adjust later if their system's not working or their scheme isn't working, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they trust in the system and the players that they've put in that system. And I think that's kind of the difference, right? Is, you know, that they don't go and say, okay, guys, we're playing the Pacers tonight. You know, we got to focus on this Paul George guy. No, they already know. Okay. Well, okay. Who's their lineup? All right. Well, you know, we're still going to put out our lineup. If it's not working, then we'll make the adjustments on the bench. And what's sad about this is, man, our bench has been having a historical year this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, insanely great.
They've had stretches where they don't play Parker, Duncan, or Ginobili. You know, Ginobili was out with, I believe it was testicular surgery.
Dude, he got a nut chopped off, man.
Yeah.
I think who gave him that shot? Was that Ryan?
Ryan Anderson. Yeah, from your
yeah,
your neck of the woods there.
My neck of the woods. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. So I mean, and they do that, and I don't know, man. I have a conflicted sense for that too. Whereas if a guy's not injured, you should probably play him. You know, the fans pay their money to play him. You know. But if a guy's old, I don't see any reason why. But there's no reason like Kawhi Leonard should ever rest.
Okay, we're closing out a little bit on time, so I'm going to, you know, start out with some rapid fire here.
Yeah, let's do the rapid fire.
Some of the tough questions.
And then
some trivia to throw at you. We already sort of established between the both of you who you felt was more important to the Spurs franchise between Tim Duncan and Greg Popovich. But who is more important, Tony Parker or Manu Ginobili? Tara, go first.
Manu Ginobili, there's no question about it. I still maintain that he should have been the MVP in 2005. I understand that there were no winners in that final series as far as the fans were concerned, especially. But he's simply been the most impactful and amazing player on the court for the Spurs, like at any given moment, especially though over that 4-year stretch. I just think that Manu was the guy.
Will.
This is hard for me here, and I know it's supposed to be rapid fire, but I'm long-winded.
It's okay.
I think it depends. I think early on in the early 2000s, or I'm sorry, the mid 2000s, Manu Ginobili. But the last 7-8 years, Tony Parker. Like, this is what kind of bothered me about your Tony Parker's good, not great statement.
That's fine.
If you look, would you consider Earl Monroe a great player? Earl the Pearl?
For my very limited knowledge of him, in all honesty, probably not.
Historically, he's considered a great player, right?
He's playground great. He's playground great.
Look at what Earl the Pearl did in his career with All-Star games, rings and whatnot. Look at what Tony Parker's done. And it's like, and look at like their points and assists and all that stuff. It's like staggering how close it is, right? But Tony Parker's second fiddle, you know, was Earl the Pearl, you know, playground legend, right?
And that's
you
fair
know?
Enough, but it doesn't help that Tony is immensely unlikable.
He is. I mean, he did have like phone sex with Brent Berry's wife.
Well, not just that, the divorce stuff, and then getting the fight in the nightclub that gave him an eye injury. That
and releasing a rap song.
He was an innocent bystander.
Was it a French rap song?
In French, yes.
It was bad.
I am definitely going to download that when the show is over.
He's one of those guys, honestly, where I initially felt like he got too much criticism or too much love, and later I felt like he got too much criticism. So it's kind of a balancing act. He's not bad, and people tend to crap on him, I think, a bit too much.
First ballot Hall of Famer.
Favorite international Spurs player?
All time?
All time. And you know what? I'm going to make it a little harder. I'm going to take Ginobili and Parker out of the equation.
You know, I'll take it.
Andrew Gaze, baby.
Oh, he played the regular season for 1 year with the Spurs. He didn't even play in the playoffs.
No, I know. I'm joking. Patty Mills, by far.
Yeah, I think it's either
they're both
him.
Australian.
I like Boban Marjanovic just because he is the essence of a James Bond movie.
You know, you and I were at WrestleMania. We were talking about the Tyler Hansbrough thing, and I never saw it.
I finally
saw it yesterday. I could not stop laughing. I'm like, Daryl was right. I was laughing on the floor. For those who are out of context with it, there is a point in the season where Boban Marjanovic is in. Tyler Hansbrough checks in, and he's literally looking at him like, who the hell is this guy? And it's just one of those great on the court, you can't copy a type of NBA
moment. Did y'all see the play where one of the Dallas Mavericks grabbed his junk and he just stared him down?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Yeah. Boban Mania.
That has to be Jamal McGee.
No, it was a white guy.
Oh, okay.
I forgot who it was. Maybe it was a black guy. I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is, one of the craziest things about Boban is what Pop has done this year is he would send him to our Austin D League team where he could get some playing time. And I think the thing that's hurting Boban the most this year is lack of playing time or, you know, inconsistent playing time where, sure. You know, when we were blowing people out by 20, 30 points, he'd get a lot of playing time. But then, you know, when in close games, Pop wouldn't even give him a run because he was the 13th guy on the bench.
Right. Pop staple, so, not playing your rookies.
So, Taro, you like Boban and
you're breaking up my point.
Uh-huh.
I love Boban. But yeah, how can you not love Boban, him? What's your point, Will? What's your point?
The point is, when Boban is allowed to play and he plays consistently, I think he's going to be one of the most unstoppable guys you'll ever see because he is an offensive force.
He's amazing. The touch he has is truly astounding. And he moves really well for a guy 7'3".
Okay.
I'm sorry about that, but the point was he has to play consistent minutes so that he stays fresh. When he does that, he's going to be amazing.
Gets a little tougher here. Would the Spurs have continued their elite success if they had kept George Hill and not traded for Kawhi Leonard?
No, absolutely not. They don't win. They probably don't win the title in 14. It's just George Hill. He's a player I like is the thing. I really like him. But you're talking about just such tremendous value you got on that trade for a team that, as we already discussed, needs to get value in players any way they can other than relying on a lottery pick. And we basically stole a finals MVP and a current top five player in the league for George Hill. You absolutely... Yeah, it's an entirely different team. I would have retired already if I was Tim Duncan.
Will?
I wish we traded Richard Jefferson. That would have been so awesome. Anyway, we got Steven Jackson.
But if you didn't have Kawhi Leonard, are we still looking at titles here?
No way. No.
Former Spurs player that you just simply did not like. It's okay to not like your team.
Okay, this is easy for me. Vernon Maxwell.
Okay.
Hated Vernon Maxwell.
Now, I'm
talking
about
Vernon Maxwell.
Now, let's talk about during the Duncan years, because, you know, Duncan brings them in, and it, you know, even if they play well under the system, it's a kind of player that gets under your nerves. You know?
Well, we've already spoken about Charles Smith, mm-hmm. Richard Jefferson. Easy.
Terrell?
I'm going to go with Samaki Walker.
Oh, wow.
That's a good one. Went to the hated Lakers.
I can't believe neither of you picked Bruce Bowen. That is very disappointing.
No, Bruce Bowen is one of my favorite Spurs of all time.
Yeah, come on.
Oh, you see that fishbowl stuff I was talking about? Right there.
Yeah, maybe a little.
Favorite Spurs performance individually? It could be a series. It could be a game.
That's hard, man.
I'll give you a few. Kawhi killing Miami in 2014. Robert Horry's game 5 against the Pistons. Duncan's near quadruple double against the Nets. Tony Parker breaking Steve Nash's nose and outplaying him in 2007.
Oh, thank God you mentioned Steve Nash. Robert Horry hip checking Steve Nash into the.
That's not a performance. That's dirty.
That's a performance. Dirty performance. A great performance.
Oh, man. That was beautiful. That was art. I'd say David Robinson scoring 71 points was up there for me, too.
Nice.
All time. Okay, but now within the title window, do you have one?
Okay, within the title window?
Yeah.
Robert Horry hip-checking Steve Nash. and that Manu Ginobili game against Phoenix where he just unloaded on him.
That was game one. Yeah, that was game one, I think.
No, this was regular season.
Oh, okay.
This is the one I mentioned earlier. Dude, we were down like 20, 25 points, and Manu stormed us back, and we won in overtime.
That was one of my favorite teams, 7 seconds or less Suns. Terrell, you got one?
You know, it's weird because I'm just throwing this one out there, but because it didn't lead to a title win or anything, but that time Duncan hit that three off that Finley move to the basket to send it into overtime against the Suns, and
that was
Finley
in 08.
Hit that other three.
That was the one. That was the year they had Shaq. They traded for Shaq.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I will never ever forget that watching that game. That is one of the most vivid recollections I have of a Spurs game.
So exciting.
Yeah. Oh, that just it was electric.
Biggest heartbreaker. Now listen, we know the two main ones that we can talk about, but I'm gonna just list a few. Okay, losing as a one seed to the Grizzlies, getting swept by the Suns in 2010, losing in the first round to the Clippers when Chris Paul hits it off the glass, everything involving Kobe Bryant and anything that ends in the word Lakers. Losing to the Thunder in 2012 in 6 games. Dirk Nowitzki with the N1 in 2006 against the Mavericks in 7 games. But the main two, obviously, the Ray Allen shot in 2013 on the corner, and then the Derek Fisher 0.4 second shot in 2004. Will, you go first. Biggest heartbreaker as a Spurs fan.
0.4. Here's the deal, man. You got to remember that game was ugly. It was not a good game.
Yeah, it was like 72-71. Yeah.
Tim Duncan hits that crazy, just toss it up, hope this goes in. Probably was fouled 2 or 3 times on the play because, you know, that's what happens. 0.4 seconds, it's over. The game's over. There's no way you're going to tell me a guy can catch a ball, turn around and shoot in 0.4 seconds. Just cannot be done. And I had my daughter, who was a month old, in my arms. I mean, she could fit in my hand and, you know. I had her when he hit that shot, and I'm like, what the hell just happened? I had to put her down. I had to, like, hand her off. I was shaking so much. I was like, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah, I agree with you. Totally. My worst moment as a Spurs fan.
Now, Tara, did you have the same response as Will did?
I did not have to put down a child, thankfully, but I was convulsing. There were tremors going on, and it's so much worse than game 6 2013, because at least in that one you could blame the Spurs. You could blame Kawhi for not hitting the free throws. You could blame Pop for not going with the rebounding lineup. In that 0.4 Derek Fisher shot was just, you can't do anything.
That and the 2002 getting blown out, or 2001 getting blown out in every game against Lakers. I just had a pit in my stomach that whole.
Because it was like you were just waiting for it to end kind of thing.
Yeah. It was just like a week of torture of just being punched in the nuts.
Favorite other guy in San Antonio Spurs history, and there are a ton in a team like this where it's all about team. Malik Rose, Sean Elliott, Brent Berry, Jaren Jackson, Steve Kerr, Steven Jackson, Michael Finley, Devin Brown. It's endless. Favorite other guy for the Spurs, Terrell.
Other random guy?
Yeah.
I have this weird, weird appreciation for Jacques Vaughn just because of how much Popovich trusted him when Tony was getting a little erratic.
Didn't
it's
he
like,
go like
Jacques.
Straight games without a made basket?
Yes. Yeah, we were talking about that beforehand. It approached double digits. But I still love the guy for his like his defense and just the way he saw the game, which Pop is big on. I love Jacques Vaughn.
Just don't please don't coach Jacques, please. You got that for me. Will.
Steven Jackson. No doubt about it.
I'll never forget Captain Jack in the 2012 Western Conference Finals, where the Thunder had a really tough win in San Antonio to take the series lead. Yep. And in the first quarter, the Spurs played great. They took a big lead. The Thunder punched back. And then in the fourth quarter, the only guy that was stepping up in that game was Steven Jackson.
Yeah.
Everybody else was wilting. And the Thunder won the game, and they went to the finals and lost to the Heat. But Steven Jackson would not fucking quit. And he was in his 30s at this point.
But think of where Steven Jackson had come from. I mean, he'd come from, you know, he had a great Indiana team, but it ended with Malice in the Palace. He was on that Golden State Warriors that upset the Mavericks in 2007, you know, but this is a guy who hadn't won in a while. I mean, this is a guy who knew he was a baller and a player. I mean, just, I love Steven Jackson, man. I mean, he was my guy. I was crushed when he left in 2003. I thought, man, why would you do this? We're losing David. Now we're losing another starter. Mm-hmm. Oh, it killed me.
Yeah.
Is Greg Popovich's contributions overstated, or is R.C. Buford's contributions understated in the Spurs organization?
I don't think it's either or.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm in on that. It's just they are one. They are legion.
They are legion.
They kind of just operate as one. It is one entity.
Okay.
You know, I think the fact that Buford has only won one like executive of the year or something is kind of tragic.
Yeah, I think Pop's only won it twice. 2014 and
what,
I think
coach of the year?
Coach of the year, 2003 and 2014.
Yeah,
that's it.
Well, it's fair.
He's about to have probably a 67 win season.
And it doesn't mean shit.
Yeah.
Let's just transition that right here. How do you feel about the Spurs' chances this season as we get ready for the playoffs? We'll go first.
Before tonight, I would have said pretty damn good.
Oh, come on. One regular season game.
No. Well, here's the thing. And plus, you know, we didn't have Boris Diaw in this one, you know.
Well, Duncan didn't play either. He rested.
Right. You know, man, it's hard to say. I think that if any team can beat the Warriors in a seven-game series, the Spurs have the best shot. But when you watch Curry play, man, it's almost transcendental. Kind of like watching Jordan at his peak. I don't know if you were able to see Rhys Jordan at his peak. It was just...
I absolutely did. Terrell did too. Yeah.
It was just like sometimes you see these guys or like, and you're just like, that guy can't be stopped. Like there's nothing you can do, you know, to stop that guy.
Is he the best guard you've ever seen, or is he the most dazzling guard you've ever seen?
Kobe Bryant against the Spurs was pretty fucking amazing, man.
Yeah.
Terrell, how you feel about your Spurs here?
Especially against the Spurs, by the way, Kobe. He always seemed to bring a little extra for that. This season, yeah, I mean, after tonight, of course, we're coming off now three straight losses, two of them against Golden State. And it's hard to get excited right now as a Spurs fan because you're watching all the attention go to Golden State, rightfully so, because that's one of the most amazing team accomplishments I think they're about to set.
But that's the funniest thing, Terrell. Isn't that typical Spurs, where, you know, they have
Spurs
this...
Spurs wait in the weeds?
Exactly. Where you have this one thing out in front in the league, everyone's talking about, and the Spurs are like, oh yeah, just keep not paying attention to us. We'll just sneak up on you later. You know, that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, that's the way it works.
Okay, I have a little segment here. I call it Talk Back to the Haters. I give you a phrase, you finish it. Okay, you both ready?
Ready.
Okay, let me see. Hold on just a second, Will. I'm having trouble with the call here. I'm going to have to cut.
This is fine.
So when you said ready, I'm going to cut that out. But I'm trying to might have to.
Oh, yeah, it looks like Terrell's like.
There we go.
Okay, oh, you back, Terrell?
I am. Yeah, they dropped me for a bit.
I know. It was weird. Well, I got a point where I can do a cutoff. So I'm going to go right into talk back to the haters like you and I had talked about before we started, where I give a phrase and you go.
Okay.
Okay. All right. To those who say Kobe was better than Tim Duncan, you say, Will, you go first.
I say that Tim Duncan is the ultimate teammate, whereas Kobe might have been the ultimate ball hawk. That's. I mean, really, look at it. 19 straight winning seasons as the team's leader. Kobe, we've seen what he does, you know, to the detriment of a team.
Terrell?
Seen it twice in his career.
Yeah, Kobe intentionally turned his team into not a contender for a 3 to 4 year stretch because he felt like pouting. That's why Tim Duncan is better.
To those who say the 1999 championship deserves an asterisk, you say...
Go root for the Bulls or Lakers and get the hell out of this podcast.
I would say, okay, take away the Heat's championship when they won against the Thunder, right? You got to take that one away. I would say that regardless of how many games were played that season, all 30 teams or 32 teams or 28 teams or however many teams played the same amount of games that season, and they all had a shot at it. And I go back to a Charles Barkley interview he had with Tim Duncan in the mid-2000s where Barkley said, you know, hey, Phil Jackson says your championship has an asterisk to it. And Tim Duncan's like, man, I don't take any of that. And Charles like, come on, man, you got to admit, man, you know, it was shortened season, all that. And then Duncan turned around to Barkley and said, would it have counted? Like, would you have taken the championship if your team won it that year? And Barkley's like, oh, it would have counted, you know.
Yeah,
obviously. To those who say the Phoenix Suns got screwed in 2007, you say?
I would say have a stronger point guard who doesn't go flying when he gets touched.
Oh, that's so dirty of you. Terrell?
I would say have a more mentally astute power forward who doesn't crumble and do stupid things.
I say don't have Mike D'Antoni as your coach.
Yeah,
probably the best,
too.
Actually.
Yeah.
To those who say... And it's really one person. That San Antonio women are ugly. You say, Will.
They're not ugly. They're just fat.
Awesome.
Terrell, can you account for this? Are there fat people in San Antonio?
You know, there are fat people everywhere, but I'm sure that there's a good bit in San Antonio because I went there for 4 days and it had good food.
To those who say that Greg Popovich is not the greatest coach in NBA history, you say.
No one has done more with less. No coach in NBA history has done more with less.
Man, that's hard because I'm a big Red Auerbach fan. I would say that he never had the benefit of having two ungodly, unworldly superstars at the same time. He had them at different points in his career, but never at their peak the way that Phil Jackson did or that Red Auerbach did.
Man, I still love Phil. I mean, you might call me the star hog there. But I mean, Phil, you got to understand how hard managing egos is in the NBA.
No,
you
know, I agree.
I know it's a different strategy. It's a different type of approach to things because you have so much talent there at your disposal to win and to get ahead. But it's still incredibly difficult in so many different ways. But Pop deserves so much credit, along with, obviously, Red Auerbach, Pat Riley, all the greats.
Well, let me tell you this, though. I will say this, because, yeah, you mentioned Riley as well. I was more impressed with Phil Jackson winning the championship with, like, Gasol and Odom and those guys than I was with him winning with Shaq and Kobe or with Scottie and Michael Jordan.
To those who say the 2005 NBA Finals between the Spurs and Pistons was the worst seven-game finals in NBA history, you say?
You are correct.
I mean, how can you say that?
Because it was awful. Ugly. It was. It was.
I mean, that game seven was like, what, 81-74 or something like that?
Oh, don't get me wrong. Look, I loved every minute of it, and it was exciting for me, but I understand why other fans were turned off.
I would agree if there wasn't a game five classic in that series.
Yeah, you're right. But that game, I mean, it went to overtime and I was falling asleep.
I think you're nuts, dude. That game, I don't think anyone had more than like a 3-point lead at any
I don't really blame. And here's the thing, though, I don't really blame as much the Spurs as I do the Pistons. That Pistons team, I know they had great team play and they were physical and they dunked a lot and all that stuff. But man, I couldn't stand watching Larry Brown's Pistons. They almost ruined
that. That started the stretch where the Spurs finals always happened in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, that was a pivotal matchup.
Right, yeah.
See, I actually thought that the 2006 Miami-Dallas was a worse series because of the way it was officiated. I thought it was horrible.
That was very poorly officiated, yeah.
You know, I mean, or like even that second Jazz-Bulls series was horrible. It was like, didn't the Jazz like score 51 points in one of those games?
Most likely.
Yeah, but that had the moments.
But to me, I mean, and to me, if we're going to pick on the Spurs, I thought the 2003 series was worse than the 2005 series to watch with that horrible
wasn't
Nets team.
Wasn't that the NBA Finals where they wore the ABA throwbacks?
Yeah.
I think, though, that most fans would rather watch a game played fast with a lot of mistakes in a game played well slowly.
Mm-hmm. I don't care. I mean, I don't see it, man. I mean, to me, that was like a legend. I mean, if you want to take it like game by game, yeah. I mean, like what, the first four were blowouts, you know, on the home court. But I thought it was compelling.
The fifth one was great, and then the sixth one wasn't. The seventh one was a little tight till we kind of pulled away down the stretch.
Right. Yeah.
It was a 7-game series, but it was during a very low point in basketball. And I completely understand why people don't like it.
The one thing I
appreciate. Rockets-Knicks? That sucked. You know?
But you had OJ to change the channel to in case you were bored.
Wow. Very topical.
Magic, what was it? Magic versus
Houston.
Houston.
Yeah, but that was a
game one. Game one was amazing.
Yeah. But you know, the one thing that Terrell said, I kind of in some way appreciate being able to sit through the ugly basketball and be super invested in it, because now I can kind of appreciate what the Spurs have sort of evolved to, where they're now one of the slowest teams in the NBA, but it's because the NBA is so fast, it's so breakneck pace, it's so guard-driven, offense has exploded, to where you watch the Spurs now, and they are almost, if you compare that to like the 2003-2005 Spurs, they're almost unrecognizable. You're almost like, this is not the Spurs, this is the Suns.
Now, to be fair, this year they've slowed it down and they've gone to the more ISO approach because of Leonard and Aldridge,
where
they've actually slowed, like their pace is like one of the slowest in the leagues, even though they're like top 10 in offense.
Okay. I think it's third slowest, yeah.
Because they're so efficient.
I'm gonna test y'all on your Spurs hardcore fandom. I'm going to give you some pretty tough trivia questions. You ready?
Oh, okay. Do we just chime in, either one of us? Or
Yeah, just buzz in? Okay.
Just jump in. I don't care who gets the credit. Because I get the credit at the end for making the question.
Very good.
Which backup big man posterized Dikembe Mutombo in the 2003 NBA Finals in Game 3?
Was it Rosho?
No.
Oh, shit. He was 2005.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Kevin Willis.
Nope. Terrell, you got a shot?
I got nothing on this.
Malik Rose.
You got it.
Malik was Malik. Hey.
Okay.
Okay.
Because I was thinking center, you know, but
only one player has played for the Spurs after David Robinson's retirement who led the league in scoring in his career. Can you name that player?
Okay.
League leader in scoring, there's not many.
Tracy McGrady.
Bang.
That's right. Yeah.
Tracy McGrady was
there for a cup of coffee.
He was in China, I believe.
Yeah, real quick one.
He had played in China, I believe, and he was picked up in 2013 for that playoff stretch. He barely played, though, I believe.
The human victory cigar that never came about.
There was another number one overall pick who played with Tim Duncan in 2005 when they won the NBA championship. Who was that player?
Big Dog?
Glenn Big Dog Robinson.
God, you're on it. Yes.
I got some smart boys here. Which former Spur is now the deputy executive director of the NBA Players Association? You might see him a lot when the collective bargaining agreement comes up next year.
Give me a hand. Position something.
Has Junior at the end of his name.
Has Junior at the end of his name?
Yes. Jump shooter.
I don't know. I give up.
Terrell, you got one?
Chuck Person? Is he a junior?
No. He might be. Roger Mason Jr.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
Wow. He was only there for a couple. I liked Mason, too, man.
I did, too. He was better than Gary Neal.
There were three well-known point guards at 6 feet and under that have played briefly with the Spurs over the past 10 seasons. Can you name them? There's three of them.
Speedy Claxton.
Okay.
Is that one?
I'll take that. I'll take that one.
Was he under 6 foot? He had to have been, right?
I've got three confirmed under 6 feet. Three confirmed. And these two were all-stars, and one was a solid player. One was drafted in the early 90s. Or actually, two of them were drafted in the early 90s, and one was drafted in the early 2000s. You actually named one of them earlier.
Did I?
Yes. I told you you're getting old, Will.
I am, man, because...
Okay.
Unless I'm looking at... Avery was like 5'11".
No, this is a little later, like when they were a little older. This is 05. One played in the 05-06 season.
Okay.
One played in the 08 season, one played in 2012.
Ellis Terrell.
Was that?
I have no idea. You done? I got nothing.
Okay. Yeah. Nick Van Exel.
No, he's more than 6 foot.
Damon Stoudemire.
Oh, shit. That's right.
Yeah, really.
And TJ Ford played in 2012 for the Spurs.
Oh, man.
He was a Spur.
If you would have said Texas, I would have gotten it.
I can't make him easy. I got to make him hard.
I know, but see, Nick Van Exel, he's confirmed under 6 foot.
That one might have gotten under the wire. I'm gonna have to double check that then. So that whole thing might have to be disqualified.
Okay.
Name the one team in the Western Conference that has yet to play the Spurs in the postseason since 1997. Only one Western Conference team has not faced off against the Spurs since Duncan has gotten there.
Houston.
Bang, the Houston Rockets.
Wow,
last played in the 1995 Western Conference Finals when Olajuwon kind of ate Robinson's lunch.
Let's not talk about that.
We can move on. Talking about the more recent Spurs.
Can you name the only other place where Greg Popovich served as a head coach?
Warriors. Oh, head coach? Pitzer.
Panoma Pitzer, which is... I can't believe this. A liberal arts college in Claremont, California, and it works in consortium. Did I say that right? In consortium with another school called Pitzer College for their athletic department. They're in a conference called the Southern California Intercollegiate Athletic Conference. He coached there from 1979 to 1988. He also won their first title in 68 years.
But he was an assistant with Larry Brown for the Warriors, right?
He was assistant to Larry Brown with Kansas, and then he followed him to San Antonio, and I believe he stayed there.
Oh, I thought he wasn't. Oh, Don Nelson. I thought he was a Nelson acolyte as well.
Well, he came from Hank Egan, who was a head coach with the Air Force Academy, because that's where he got his degree from the Air Force.
And then Hank Egan, I think, left with Mike Brown to the Cavaliers.
Can you name Greg Popovich's major at the Air Force Academy?
Soviet studies?
Oh. That is, yeah.
Okay. You're hitting good on this one.
Dude, I've read a lot of articles about Pop over the years, and, you know, as the lore of Pop comes, it's like, you know, that those kind of things aren't even like, it's just like second hand knowledge here. You know?
We all, and Terrell's a wrestling fan too, so he'll know this too. Well, we all know Shawn Michaels from San Antonio in his hometown is a diehard Spurs fan. But name the current WWE wrestler who is also an avid Spurs fan.
Oh, my God.
Good Lord, yeah.
While Terrell's thinking of this, I will say that Tim Duncan is a huge
I'll put it this way. He looks like a guy that you might see on the basketball court.
Would it be...
Banging down low.
Would it Titus O'Neil? No. Yes, he's from Florida.
Think, he has to be like, think veteran. Think older.
Undertaker. Oh,
no. I don't know. It might not be confirmed if Mark Calaway's his first fan. I can't confirm nor deny.
It's not Mark Henry, even though he's
you
from
got
Texas.
It.
Was it because he's
no
from Texas?
No way.
Mark yeah, Henry is a Spurs fan.
Okay. That doesn't surprise me. He's from Texas, man.
Other celebrity Spurs fans include Selena Gomez, Michelle Beadle, George Strait,
yep.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Good stuff.
Eva Longoria.
Married
not anymore, right?
And the drug lord, El Grande.
My man, who's the guy who does the show, Stephen A. Smith?
Oh, Skip Bayless.
Skip Bayless.
He likes anybody who's against LeBron that year.
No, he's been a consistent Spurs.
So he's going to be a huge Raptors fan this year, I would bet.
Also, did Mexico name their drug lord after the Taco Bell menu item, or is it the opposite?
But no, Tim Duncan, when he was first drafted, they asked him what his favorite video game was, and it was like WCW versus NWO.
Revenge. Yeah, great.
The
game.
One before Revenge versus NWO.
Oh, the World.
The World.
NWO versus the World, WCW. Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, that was the old one, man. That's when they had all the Japanese wrestlers included.
And recently, he took his kids to WWE. He was backstage at a San Antonio show where they had like an article in the newspaper about Tim Duncan loving WWE. But I think he was more like a WCW guy. Like, I get that vibe because he was, you know, Wake Forest, you know, the islands were close to WCW land. But that's neither here nor there. Any more?
Interesting.
I got one more here for you. It might. Can you name the Hall of Fame coach who served as head coach for the Spurs for 20 games?
You just named him earlier, Tarkanian. Yeah.
Jerry Tark the Shark, the late Tark the Shark. God rest his soul.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
Okay, and we wrap this up. You know, if you want, this is like your Jerry thought of the day. Any kind of takeaways you want to take from the San Antonio Spurs as we continue another playoff odyssey for the Spurs, and you know, potentially whatever happens with them, we'll see. But you know, just in general about the Spurs, any kind of thoughts that you would like to take away from this before we finish up?
Which one? Both of us?
Yeah, either or.
Okay. Do you have yours, Terrell?
Yeah, I'm hoping that CIA Pop has one last little subterfuge, one little trick up his sleeve going into this postseason. I predict that you will see a tremendous amount of both Boban and Andre Miller in any series against the Warriors.
God, I hope so. I hope he's, you know, I hope he doesn't
post him.
Andre Miller is so old that the Spurs' average age went up like a year. In terms of experience,
insane.
Like it literally went from 30.8 to 31.8.
We need a strong guard. We need a strong guard, and he is the only guy who fits that bill.
He is strong. He's like I remember he talked about a story about how he said his diet was like eating candy. Like he never slept out because he was just built to play basketball.
The Lamar Odom diet.
Yeah, exactly.
Without the cocaine and all.
Well, the good parts.
Final thought.
My final thought is to be a Spurs fan has been like beyond spoiled as a sports fan. I mean, I've had 5 championships for my team. My team has had 1 losing season since 1989. You know what I mean? This has been like my buddy Phil Schneider, who's always been a huge Warriors fan. I mean, he was like 1 when they won their first championship in 75, and he had to wait 40 years, you know, or he wasn't even born yet. And he had to wait 40 years for a championship.
Wow.
And I've had 5 championship Riverwalk parades, been a part of one of them. And I have had a team that has won every single year except once, which we landed Tim Duncan in the last 27, 28 years. How spoiled am I? And it's you, if you're a Spurs fan and you have been for a long time, you've been blessed because even before that, you only had a couple of years of bad seasons because you had George Gervin leading your team for the decade before that. I mean, one of the best franchises in all of sports history.
If Ginobili and Duncan both go out the same year, say next year, will you cry?
Yes.
Yes.
Will you cry when Kobe Bryant says goodbye this week?
No.
Not even like a little like a sympathy type of like one of those wrestling rivals, like, man, no. I never liked him, but boy, no. I'm gonna miss him kind of thing.
No. Don't let the door hit your ass on the way out. Get out.
Oh, brutal.
He outstayed his welcome, and he is now a detriment to the team. He is not an asset to the team. Tim Duncan's still one of the best defensive players in the NBA, even though the guy can't lift a half an inch off the ground. So Kobe Bryant brings nothing except hurting the development of those young players and hogging up minutes for someone who could be potentially better and hogging up cap space. Good riddance. Get the fuck out.
It is the Russell era, Kobe.
Not for long, man.
Well, yeah, that's not
good. Well, the Lakers did the impossible. They found somebody who's seedier and more likely to betray you than Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
Very good job. But this is not a Laker podcast. I got to save that one for Scott for another day when better days are ahead in about 3 or 4 years. This is going to be closing out that show. Will, thank you for coming. And Terrell, you made your debut.
Pleasure.
I think you shone bright. Is shown a word?
It is now.
Okay. Like, and that's
just knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, just knocked it out. And that's going to be doing our show for a team for all seasons, the San Antonio Spurs, on behalf of Will from Texas and from Terry. Take care, guys.